health industry groups are expected to deliver.
If you like the plan you have, you can keep it.
To take over the healthcare system, either directly or indirectly, for the government to control it.
A lot of my friends, where they get their healthcare from is the emergency room. They're in the emergency room every week. They break a nail in the emergency room.
How are you going to avoid not having the ability to cost shift as you shrink that portion of privately funded health insurance?
Continuing our discussion now of healthcare reform as Washington attempts to grapple with a very, very complex issue in the early days of the Obama administration. Last week, we talked about how doctors imagine the changes in healthcare that are afoot. Today, we're going to talk about at least one model that may be looked at very seriously in Washington as a plan for changing the way people are covered in healthcare. It's called the Massachusetts Model for Universal Care. Can it be implemented on a national scale? Joining us to fully grasp how this model might be scaled up to a national level is Trudy Lieberman. She directs the Health and Medicine Reporting Program at the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism. She's also a longtime contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review and has been following the so-called Massachusetts model closely since 2006 when the sweeping reform was enacted. Trudy, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Now, this plan came in as a bipartisan plan under then-Governor Mitt Romney, if I'm not mistaken.
There were many, many supporters of the Massachusetts plan, not only the governor, the state legislator, the medical establishment in Massachusetts, and many of the advocacy groups.
2006, it was enacted. 2009, what's the update? Has it worked?
It's rather mixed. One can say that certainly more people have health insurance now than they had before. Some 400,000 people are now covered. They have insurance through public programs like Medicare, or they've been asked to buy insurance in the private market.
And how did the state accomplish this? Did it just wave a magic wand and say everyone's insured now, or did it actually have to enact new programs and come up with new sources of financing?
What they did is enact what's called an individual mandate, and the mandate is a requirement that just about everybody in the state must carry insurance. That means that if you have it from your employer, that's fine. If you don't have it from your employer or Medicare or Medicaid, then you have to go into the individual market and buy it. And so what people have done is, under threat of a tax penalty, a lot of them have bought policies.
So the model here is what they do in driver's licenses. I mean, you can get a license, but you can't register your car unless you can show proof of insurance. And the state, of course, is in control of car registrations. Is that working here to really bring everybody under the umbrella? Tax penalties might not work for everybody.
Well, it's a little bit different. In auto insurance, people are required to buy insurance generally to protect the other guy. It's liability insurance that's required. In the case of health insurance, it's really different because you're buying insurance to protect yourself and your family. And so what happens is that people either have to buy the policies, which might be quite expensive for them, or they have to take a tax penalty. I should add that there are subsidies for people who have incomes less than 300% of poverty. That's about $66,000 for a family of four and $32,000 for an individual. So those people get some help in terms of subsidies.
So 97% of the people in Massachusetts are now covered. That's a number certainly to be admired by the federal government. But how much has it cost the state? And is Governor Deval Patrick cleaning up something of a mess from the enactment of this 2006 legislation?
Well, there were serious problems with the law from the get-go. They really did not have any cost containment, cost controls built into the law. In fact, as one person told me, it wasn't even part of the conversation. The conversation in Massachusetts in early 2006 was just, let's get more people covered. And I should add that Massachusetts originally had a lot of people who were covered. It didn't have such high rates of uninsurance as many other states have. So essentially, they brought people into this mess that the rest of us in the country are in, and that's that costs continue to rise, and there doesn't seem to be any politically palatable way to curb them.
Does the Massachusetts model work in states like Mississippi or Arkansas or Nevada and Florida, where the demographics are so radically different?
I think there's a big question about that. As I've been doing my series for CJR.org on how the Massachusetts plan has worked and what lessons we can learn from it, I ask that question to many people up there. Does the plan travel well? And almost everybody I talked to up there was really skeptical about whether the Massachusetts plan can be translated to Mississippi or Texas, for example, because the rates of uninsurance are much higher in those states. And also in Massachusetts, the employers have provided coverage to workers more than they have in other states.
You know, one of the things that's frustrating to me is that the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, last week came out with this number, $1 point something trillion over 10 years is what this is going to cost. GOP and other lawmakers over the weekend said, that's a deal breaker. We can't do this if it's that expensive. I'm wondering, as an observer of all of this, we've done a lot of things in the United States that cost that much. I mean, the Iraq War is something that's going to probably cost $1 trillion in the end. Over 10 years, is $1 trillion truly an unreasonable deal breaker, whatever model we use for health care reform?
Well, I think it depends on what side of the fence you're on, because what has to happen is that if we mandate insurance for everybody in the United States, 85% of the uninsured can't afford to buy insurance, so they would be buying it now. The problem is that we need the money to pay for subsidies. Well, that's fine, and that's going to cost $1.5, $1.6 trillion over 10 years. But unless there's a way to control the escalating costs of medical care, those costs are going to continue to rise.
Is there any advantage in politically the way Massachusetts did it? It did the mandate first and is sort of worrying about the head-scratching mathematics and cost problems later?
I think that's also debatable. I think, as somebody told me early on, that they've brought people into the same mess that the rest of us are in. And until that changes, they're going to have trouble paying for those subsidies.
Well, one of the problems of implementing one of the models that Washington will be looking at, the Massachusetts Model for Healthcare Reform, Trudy Lieberman directs the Health and Medicine Reporting Program at the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism. Her series is in CJR.com?
CJR.org.
.org. Thank you very much, Trudy. All this morning, we've been following the latest from Iran, but how do you keep up? What are your sources? Okay, you listen to The Takeaway. Perhaps you listen to the BBC, Facebook. What's the combination of sources that puts together your front page? We want you to check in with us about your news diet. How are you keeping up with the latest from Iran or elsewhere? 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. And on that, here's your takeaway.
In the absence of permanent correspondents versed in what's going on in Iran and with the good contacts on the ground and so on, it's going to be much, much harder to get a barometer, to get a gauge on really the significance of the events on the ground there.
That's Jonathan Marcus from our partner, the BBC. They've been shut down in their Iran coverage. You're not, though. Tell us your sources at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org, where you can also listen to our Iran coverage, get our podcast to go. And while you're there, sports correspondent Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen is writing about the finish of a wet U.S. Open and the start of a roofed-in Wimbledon. That's at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.